All right, so, bouncing back from tough times, right? I don't just mean surviving. I mean like actually using those challenges to come back even stronger. That's what this Strongtowns Pandemic Response Toolkit is all about. And that's what we're diving deep into today.
Absolutely.
It's all about how we can use these insights to build more resilient communities, starting right where we are.
You know what strikes me about this toolkit is just how practical it is. It's not some like pie in the sky, theoretical document. It lays out a clear, phased approach designed specifically for local leaders. And yes, that includes you listening right now, to first navigate that like immediate shock of something like a pandemic, and then actually use that disruption to make real positive changes.
So we're talking about taking action at the local level, not waiting for someone else to fix
A
things.
hundred percent.
This isn't just about the pandemic, though, right?
Exactly. The principles here apply to any kind of crisis. We're looking at the Strongtowns Local Leaders Toolkit itself.
Got it.
No shortcuts, no summaries, just the core ideas that can help you understand how change actually happens in your community.
Because let's be honest, sometimes local government can feel like this big mysterious machine,
Oh, yeah, for sure.
right? And this deep dive is all about understanding the levers of that machine, no
Absolutely.
matter what your role is in the community.
And the toolkit doesn't waste any time getting to the heart of the matter. The immediate response kicks in right from day one of a crisis and covers those crucial first 60 days.
Okay, so what are the priorities in those first 60 days? What needs to happen right away?
First and foremost, it's about a fundamental shift in mindset. We need to recognize that local government is the highest form of coordination for the community, not just a rule enforcer or a service provider.
So it's less about top-down control and more about empowering the community to take action.
Precisely.
Got it.
The toolkit gets very specific about where that action is needed most, starting with food and shelter. These are the absolute essentials, and the toolkit acknowledges that local government might not always be the best equipped to provide these things directly.
So what's the alternative? If the government isn't stepping in to provide food and shelter, who is?
That's where the power of partnerships comes in. The toolkit stresses the importance of public-private collaboration, recognizing that local businesses, community organizations, and even individual residents often have resources and expertise that the government simply doesn't.
It's about tapping into the strengths that already exist within the community rather than trying to impose solutions from the outside.
Exactly. And this approach plays out in some really interesting ways. Take masks, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those early days of the pandemic when there was so much debate about whether or not to wear masks?
Oh, I definitely remember. It felt like everyone had a different opinion on the matter.
And the toolkit takes a really interesting approach to this. It emphasizes framing mask wearing not just as a personal health choice, but as a civic duty that's essential for economic recovery.
So it's not just about protecting yourself, it's about protecting your community and the livelihoods of your neighbors.
Exactly.
That's a powerful message.
It reframes the whole issue, moving away from individual rights versus collective good, and toward a shared understanding that we're all in this together.
We're all in this together.
And then there's the idea of space for people.
Now, space for people sounds intriguing. What exactly does that mean?
Well, the toolkit encourages local leaders to be proactive about opening up streets and public spaces. Think closing streets to cars and allowing pedestrians and cyclists to spread out. The pandemic forced many cities to try this out of necessity. And you know what? In many cases, those changes were so popular that they stuck around long after the immediate crisis passed.
It's fascinating how a disruption like that can actually create an opportunity to experiment with new ideas and challenge the status quo.
Exactly. And speaking of challenging the status quo, the toolkit also has some interesting things to say about enforcement. It advises local leaders to go easy on enforcement during a crisis, recognizing that true resilience comes from within the community, not from top-down mandates.
So instead of cracking down with fines and penalties, the focus is on building community commitment through voluntary compliance and a shared sense of responsibility.
It's about trusting people to do the right thing and empowering them to take ownership of their community's well-being.
I like that.
Now, while all this is happening, the toolkit also emphasizes the importance of data collection.
Data collection in the midst of a crisis. That seems a bit counterintuitive.
It might seem that way, but here's the thing.
Okay.
You need to understand what's happening on the ground before you can effectively respond.
Yeah.
The toolkit suggests repurposing underutilized staff to gather real-time data on the community's needs.
Okay.
Instead of getting bogged down in pre-pandemic tasks that might no longer be relevant.
So it's about being flexible and adaptable, using the resources you have in the most effective way possible. What else is crucial in this immediate response phase? We've talked about food, shelter, public health, adapting to change, data collection. What am I missing?
Yes. The toolkit also stresses the importance of cash preservation during those early days of a crisis.
Hold on. You're saying don't spend money in a crisis.
It's tempting.
Doesn't that seem a bit backwards? Shouldn't we be deploying resources to provide support where it's needed?
It's tempting to think so, but the toolkit makes a really interesting point.
Right.
Uncertainty demands flexibility.
Okay.
The community's needs and priorities might shift dramatically in the coming months.
Mm.
And having those financial reserves will allow local leaders to adapt their response as the situation evolves.
So it's about taking a deep breath, resisting the urge to react impulsively, and instead taking a more measured strategic approach.
Precisely. And this leads to one of the most intriguing and potentially controversial recommendations in the toolkit.
Okay.
It specifically cautions against rushing to bail out businesses.
Now, that does seem counterintuitive. Explain this one to me. In a crisis, shouldn't we be doing everything we can to support our local businesses?
It's a natural impulse.
Yeah.
But the toolkit argues that it's important to weather the storm first.
Okay.
Bailing out businesses that might already be struggling could actually hinder long-term economic recovery.
So are we just letting those businesses fail? That seems harsh.
Not at all. The toolkit isn't advocating for abandoning businesses.
Okay.
It's about being ready to support the businesses that adapt and survive.
Okay.
The ones that prove their resilience and demonstrate a capacity to innovate.
Got it.
It's about fostering an environment where the strongest and most adaptable businesses can thrive in the long run.
Yeah.
Ultimately leading to a more robust local economy.
So instead of propping up businesses that might already be on shaky ground, we're creating an environment where the most innovative and resilient businesses can flourish. That's a pretty bold approach.
It is, and it speaks to the overall philosophy of the Strong Towns movement, which is all about building resilient communities from the ground up.
I like it.
And that brings us to the end of phase-ize.
Okay.
We've stabilized the situation, gathered data,
right.
Preserved our resources,
yeah.
And hopefully learned some valuable lessons along the way. But the work doesn't stop there.
Right. According to the toolkit, you don't go back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
You embrace the fact that things have fundamentally changed.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where phase two comes in. We're not going back to normal.
Exactly. Phase two covers the period from 3 to 12 months into the crisis.
Okay.
And it's all about using the disruption as a catalyst for long-term positive change.
Okay. I'm ready to hear more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into phase two and see what the toolkit recommends for navigating this new reality.
Sounds good. So we're moving into phase two now. We're not going back to normal, which covers months 3 to 12 of a crisis. What's really interesting here is the mindset shift.
Yeah.
It's all about accepting that this isn't just a temporary blip. Things have fundamentally changed,
mm-hmm.
and we need to embrace that change.
Okay, so acceptance is key.
Mm-hmm.
What else does this new reality demand?
Well, a big theme in phase two is self-sufficiency.
Oh, yeah.
It's about recognizing that we can't always rely on outside systems to take care of us.
Right.
And taking steps to become more resilient as a community.
Self-sufficiency. I mean, that sounds great in theory, but how realistic is it? Especially in today's world where everything is so interconnected. Are we mm-hmm. talking about going completely off the grid here?
You raise a valid point. Complete self-sufficiency might not be achievable or even desirable
right.
for most communities. The toolkit acknowledges that. It's more about recognizing those vulnerabilities that the crisis has exposed
right.
and finding ways to reduce our dependence on systems that might not always be there for us.
So it's not about isolationism. It's about creating a more robust and resilient local ecosystem.
Yeah.
Come on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
How do we actually make that happen? What are some tangible steps we can take?
Well, the toolkit gets pretty specific with its recommendations. One of the most intriguing ones is this idea of legalizing the obvious.
Legalizing the obvious. Okay, now you've got me curious. What does that even mean?
Think about all the things that suddenly became essential during the pandemic.
Okay.
Home-based businesses, neighborhood-based services, things that our pre-pandemic zoning codes often made difficult or even impossible.
You know, you're right. Suddenly, Everyone was baking bread and selling it to their neighbors, offering haircuts in their garages, setting up little free libraries on their front lawns. It was amazing to see how people stepped up to fill those gaps when traditional systems were disrupted.
Exactly. The pandemic showed us just how artificial some of those restrictions were mm-hmm. and revealed the potential of these hyperlocal solutions. Legalizing the obvious means acknowledging that and creating a more permissive environment where those solutions can flourish even after the immediate crisis has passed.
So it's about recognizing the ingenuity and resilience that already exists within our communities.
Yes.
And removing the barriers that prevent them from thriving.
Precisely. And this idea of empowering local innovation ties directly into another key action in phase two, unleashing entrepreneurs.
Okay, I'm all for unleashing entrepreneurs. How do we do that?
It's about easing restrictions.
Okay.
Creating opportunities for pop-up businesses and temporary use permits.
Right.
And fostering an environment where new ideas can be tested and refined without being stifled by bureaucracy.
I'm picturing a community where it's easier to start a small business, where empty storefronts are transformed into vibrant community hubs, where there's a buzz of creative energy in the air. It's exciting to think about.
It is. And it's not just about creating a more dynamic and interesting local economy.
Right.
It's also about creating more resilient and adaptable systems.
Mm.
Remember when the big systems fail? It's the small local businesses that often step in to fill the gaps.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
So it's not just about surviving the crisis. It's about using it as a springboard for long-term economic renewal
right.
and building a more sustainable future for our communities.
Exactly. And this focus on local empowerment connects to another big idea in phase two.
Okay.
Housing flexibility.
Housing flexibility.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the toolkit's take on that?
Well, it encourages communities to explore options like legalizing accessory dwelling units.
Okay.
Or ADUs.
Right.
Encouraging duplex conversions and generally creating a more diverse and responsive housing market.
So it's about moving away from those rigid zoning codes that limit housing options.
Exactly.
And creating a more adaptable system that can respond to the changing needs of the community.
Precisely. And it's about recognizing that housing affordability is not just a problem for low-income families.
Right.
It's an issue that affects everyone,
yeah.
from young people just starting out to seniors looking to downsize.
It's about creating a community where people of all ages and income levels can find a place to live and thrive.
Exactly. And speaking of thriving, let's talk about transportation.
Okay.
The toolkit advocates for significant investments in walking and biking infrastructure.
Ah, yes. This goes back to that space for people concept from phase, right?
You're right. It's all connected. But in phase two, the toolkit gets more specific.
Okay.
It recommends using the Strong Towns four-step approach for making capital investments,
okay.
particularly when it comes to transportation infrastructure.
Okay, so what's this four-step approach all about? I'm sensing it's a pretty big deal in the Strong Towns world.
It's a really practical framework for making data-driven decisions,
okay.
rather than just throwing money at projects that sound good in theory.
Right.
It starts with humbly observing the problem.
Okay.
Then asking the community for solutions,
right.
implementing the smallest possible change to address that problem,
mm-hmm.
and finally analyzing the results before scaling up.
So it's an iterative experimental approach that prioritizes community input and learning by doing.
I like that.
It's about being responsive to the needs of the community and avoiding those big, expensive projects that often end up creating more problems than they solve. And this iterative approach doesn't just apply to physical infrastructure.
Okay.
The toolkit also suggests applying it to the bureaucracy itself. Wait, we're applying the four-step approach to government bureaucracy. Now, that's a deep dive I'd love to hear more about.
It's a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
The toolkit suggests shifting the focus of city staff away from simply processing permits.
Okay.
And toward a culture that rewards acts of service to residents.
So instead of just going through the motions and checking boxes, city staff are empowered to be problem solvers and active participants in making their communities better.
That's the goal. It's a shift from a transactional mindset to a service-oriented one.
I love that. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground in phase two, legalizing the obvious, unleashing entrepreneurs, housing flexibility, transportation investments, rethinking bureaucracy. It's a comprehensive approach to building community resilience. Anything else we need to consider?
There's one more critical element we need to address.
Okay.
State and federal assistance.
Ah, yes. The big question of how local communities should navigate the often complex world of outside funding.
Exactly. And the toolkit offers some really insightful guidance on this.
Okay.
It acknowledges that outside funding, particularly from the federal government, right, often comes with strings attached.
Right.
And those strings might not always align with the best interests of the local community.
So what's the advice? Just say no to federal aid. That doesn't seem very practical.
Not necessarily. The toolkit emphasizes the importance of being proactive. Have a clear strategy in place before those funds are offered.
Okay.
So you're not just reacting to whatever comes your way.
So it's about knowing what your community needs and being prepared to advocate for those needs, even if it means pushing back against the way things are typically done.
That's a key part of it. The toolkit specifically advises local leaders to push for cash assistance instead of aid that's tied to specific projects. This allows for greater flexibility and local control rather than being locked into those shovel-ready infrastructure projects that might not be the best long-term investments for the community.
Okay, so prioritize flexibility and local control over predetermined projects. But what happens if infrastructure funding is the only option on the table? How do we make sure those projects are truly beneficial for our communities?
Well, the toolkit offers some really insightful criteria for choosing projects wisely, even if they're coming from outside funding sources. Yeah. It's all about maximizing the long-term benefit to the community while minimizing the potential for creating new liabilities down the road.
Break down those criteria for us. What should local leaders be looking for when evaluating infrastructure projects?
First and foremost, prioritize maintenance over new capacity. Like it's about fixing what you already have before building something new, which often leads to more long-term maintenance costs and a greater strain on local resources.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's like fixing the leaky roof before building an addition onto your house. You got to take care of the basics first.
Exactly. And then there's the question of what type of infrastructure to prioritize.
Okay.
The toolkit suggests focusing on below-ground infrastructure, like water and sewer systems, which are often aging and in need of significant upgrades.
So less glamorous than a shiny new bridge.
Yeah.
But potentially much more impactful for the long-term health and well-being of the community.
Precisely. And the toolkit also emphasizes the importance of prioritizing investments in older neighborhoods,
okay,
those built before World War II. These neighborhoods, even when they're home to lower income residents, often have the bones for walkability, mixed use development, and a strong sense of community.
That's a fascinating point. Mm. It really challenges the conventional wisdom that newer development is always better for the economy.
Right. And this all ties back to that core principle of building a strong and resilient core, which is a recurring theme throughout the toolkit. We've tackled the immediate response, navigated the transition, secured outside funding, and laid the groundwork for long-term change.
So are we ready to shift our focus to the long game? I'm eager to hear what the toolkit has to say about creating a sustainable future for our communities.
Absolutely. Phase 3 is all about building a strong town for the long haul, 1 year and beyond.
Okay.
It's where the rubber really meets the road and where the principles of the Strong Towns movement come together to create a powerful vision for a more resilient and prosperous future. All right, so let's dive into phase 3, building a strong town, which tackles everything from 1 year out and beyond. I think it's important to acknowledge that the further we look into the future, the less certain things become. This isn't about like having a crystal ball and predicting every challenge that might come our way.
Yeah.
It's about building a community that's flexible and resilient enough to thrive no matter what the future holds.
Okay, so how do we do that? What's the secret sauce for building a truly strong town? Give us the recipe.
Well, the toolkit uses this great analogy of a strong, healthy human body.
Okay.
Think about it. If you're healthy, you're more likely to fight off an infection, right? A strong town works the same way. A healthy community is better equipped to withstand unexpected trauma.
Yeah.
And just like our bodies, it's not just about surviving. It's about thriving, even getting stronger in the process.
I like that analogy. So if a strong town is like a healthy body, what are the equivalent of a healthy diet and regular exercise for a community?
It's all about creating habits and practices that allow for productive responses to stress while simultaneously growing stronger and more prosperous over time. The Strong Towns approach is packed with these kinds of habits and practices.
All right, let's get specific. What are some of those habits and practices that can help a community build long-term resilience?
One of the key principles is this idea of little bets rather than those big transformational projects that often come with huge price tags and even bigger risks. The toolkit actually recommends a book called Tactical Urbanism: Short-Term Action for Long-Term Change.
Okay.
It's all about making small, incremental investments that are low risk, but can yield significant results over time.
So it's about testing things out, being willing to adapt and not getting bogged down in analysis paralysis. I know I'm guilty of that, sometimes wanting everything to be perfect before taking action.
We've all been there. But the Strongtowns approach embraces the idea of learning by doing.
Right.
It's okay to start small, see what works, and adjust along the way. That's how real innovation happens. And speaking of innovation, another key principle is prioritizing resilience over mere efficiency.
Now that's interesting. Why is resilience more important than efficiency? Don't we want things to run smoothly and efficiently?
We do, but the toolkit makes a really important distinction here.
Okay.
When we focus solely on efficiency, we create systems that are brittle and prone to breaking under pressure. It's like building a house of cards, one little gust of wind and the whole thing collapses.
So are you saying that efficiency is bad?
Not at all. Efficiency is important, but it can't be the only goal.
Okay.
We also need to build in redundancy, flexibility, and adaptability.
Mm.
It's about having those backup systems in place. So when something unexpected happens, we're not left scrambling. The toolkit draws a really interesting parallel with Darwin's theory of evolution. It's not about survival of the fittest. It's about survival of the most adaptable.
That makes a lot of sense. So it's about building in that capacity to adapt and evolve rather than trying to optimize for a specific set of conditions that might change at any moment.
Yeah.
So how do we build in that adaptability? How do we create systems that are responsive to change?
Well, for starters, we need to recognize that cities are complex, constantly changing organisms. They're not static machines, and they need to be able to respond to feedback at the local level.
Yeah.
This means empowering individuals and communities to shape their own environments and trusting them to make decisions that are in their best interests.
So instead of imposing top-down solutions, we're creating a more bottom-up approach that's driven by the needs and aspirations of the community itself.
Exactly. And this brings us back to that idea of human scale design that we touched on earlier. It's about creating places that are built for people, not just cars. It's about prioritizing walkability, bikeability, and creating those vibrant mixed-use neighborhoods where people can live, work, and play without having to rely on a car for every trip.
We talked about the space for people concept and the importance of investing in walking and biking infrastructure. It sounds like all these ideas are interconnected.
They absolutely are. And the toolkit makes a compelling argument that this focus on human scale design isn't just about aesthetics or quality of life. It's also essential for financial productivity.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
So building walkable, vibrant neighborhoods actually makes economic sense.
That's what the data suggests. When you create places where people want to be, you create a natural demand for businesses and services. And those businesses, in turn, create jobs and generate economic activity. It's a virtuous cycle.
That's really fascinating. So it's not just about building a more beautiful and livable community. It's about building a more prosperous one as well. What other principles are essential for building a strong town?
Well, the toolkit places a lot of emphasis on doing the math. And I'm not just talking about balancing the budget here. It's about understanding the long-term consequences of decisions, particularly when it comes to debt and infrastructure liabilities.
Okay, so it's about responsible stewardship of public resources, recognizing that the choices we make today will have ripple effects for generations to come.
Exactly. And that's why the Strongtowns approach is so focused on building incrementally, taking small steps, and constantly assessing the impact of those steps before moving forward. It's about avoiding those big, risky gambles that often leave communities saddled with debt and unsustainable infrastructure.
So it's about thinking holistically, taking a long-term perspective, and making sure that every decision we make is moving us towards a more resilient and sustainable future.
That's a great way to put it. And with all these principles in mind, the toolkit lays out 8 key areas of focus for building a strong town.
All right, let's hear those 8 areas. What are the building blocks of a strong town?
First and foremost, focus on building a strong downtown surrounded by an ecosystem of diverse neighborhoods. This is about creating a vibrant, interconnected core that can adapt and thrive in the face of change.
So it's about moving away from the sprawling, car-dependent development patterns that have dominated for so long and creating those walkable, mixed-use environments that foster a sense of community and economic vitality.
Exactly. And this focus on creating a diverse and vibrant mix of uses extends beyond the downtown core.
Okay.
The toolkit also stresses the importance of expanding housing opportunities, particularly those missing middle options that fall between single-family homes and large apartment complexes.
Okay, you'd have to explain missing middle housing to me. What exactly does that mean?
It's a term that's used to describe a range of housing types that are often missing from our communities due to zoning restrictions.
Okay.
Think duplexes, triplexes, townhouses, courtyard apartments.
Right.
Those smaller, more affordable options that provide a stepping stone between renting an apartment and owning a single family home.
Ah, I see. So it's about creating more diverse and attainable housing options for people at all stages of life.
Mm.
We talked about ADUs and duplex conversions earlier. It sounds like this missing middle housing concept is another way to add more flexibility and affordability to the housing market.
That's right. And then, of course, there's the transportation piece. The toolkit urges local leaders to view transportation as a means to an end, not an end in itself.
So it's not just about building more roads or expanding highways. It's about investing in transportation options that support the overall goals of building a strong and resilient community.
Precisely. And this ties back to that four-step approach you discussed earlier with its emphasis on maintenance and data-driven decision-making.
Right.
It's about fixing what's broken and investing strategically in the transportation options that will best serve the needs of the community, not just throwing money at the problem.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've got a strong downtown, a diverse mix of housing options, a multimodal transportation system. What else is on the list?
The toolkit encourages local leaders to adopt a gardening mentality when it comes to economic development.
Okay, that sounds intriguing, but I'm not sure I understand the analogy. How does gardening apply to economic development?
It's about shifting away from that old model of chasing after big corporations with tax breaks and incentives, and instead focusing on cultivating a diverse ecosystem of local businesses.
Okay.
Just like a gardener carefully tends to X to their plants, providing the right conditions for them to thrive, local leaders can create an environment where small businesses can flourish.
So it's about nurturing those small businesses, providing them with the resources and support they need to grow and succeed.
Exactly. And this ties back to that idea of building resilience from within. When you have a strong network of local businesses, you're less vulnerable to economic shocks. You're also creating a more distinctive and vibrant local economy that reflects the unique character of your community.
It's about creating a sense of place, a sense of belonging, and a sense of pride in the community. I like that. What else does the toolkit recommend?
It also highlights the importance of leveraging public spaces as community assets. We tend to think of parks and plazas as amenities, but they can be so much more than that. They can enhance property values, create a sense of community, and even generate economic activity.
It's about making those spaces work harder for the community, both economically and socially.
Exactly. And speaking of community, the toolkit stresses the need for ongoing, meaningful public engagement. It's not just about checking a box during a formal planning process.
Right.
It's about building relationships, listening to the needs of the community, and creating a culture of collaboration and transparency.
So it's about creating a two-way dialogue where residents feel heard and empowered to shape the future of their communities.
Hmm.
I think that's so important. And finally, what's the last area of focus?
The toolkit reminds us to be mindful of our long-term financial obligations. It's about making responsible choices today that won't burden future generations. It's about reducing debt and liabilities and making sure that our communities are on a sound financial footing for years to come.
It's about thinking holistically, taking the long view, and recognizing that building a strong town is a marathon, not a sprint.
That's a great way to put it. The Strong Towns Pandemic Response Toolkit is a comprehensive and inspiring guide for creating communities that are not only resilient in the face of crisis, but also thrive over the long haul.
I couldn't agree more. This toolkit is packed with so many insightful ideas and actionable strategies. It's clear that the Strong Towns approach is about so much more than just bouncing back from a crisis. It's about using those challenges as opportunities to build something better, something more resilient, something truly strong.
It's a powerful vision for the future of our communities, and it all starts with thinking and acting locally.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with this question. What small step can you take today to nudge your community in a more resilient direction? It might be connecting with your local officials, attending a community meeting, or simply starting a conversation with your neighbors about the future you want to create together. Because remember, building a strong town starts with each and every one of us.
And the Strong Towns Pandemic Response Toolkit is a great place to begin.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep building strong towns.